Young Justice fans, we are back for another exciting week as we get closer to preparing that after anti-life equation. Right here, we're going to talk all things episodes 7 through 9, Young Justice Outsiders. Stay tuned.
You're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
And when you hear that sound, you know it's time for Young Justice Outsiders, that long-awaited season 3. We are back. We're getting them fed to us because we're all addicted. We're getting them fed 3 at a time. So we handle them 3 at a time right here on AfterBuzz. My name's Taron. I will be your host. And we're talking Young Justice Outsiders, episodes 7, 8, and 9 of season 3. Now, the episode names are Evolution, Trip Tech, and Home Fires. And as we have spoken before, they all work out. When you read the names of the titles straight down, it's Prepare the Anti-Life Equation. And
our
we get much closer
Kevin
to that right now. We get much closer to that. Even our founder, Kevin, knows about this. Kevin Undergaro is a big fan of Young Justice, so we're happy to have him as one of our big supporters. We appreciate each and every one of you guys for watching as well. A lot of good comments last time. And I love getting feedback on tidbits that come in, because it's like everyone's seeing a piece of this puzzle. Honestly, Young Justice is possibly the most overall satisfying of the DC properties, because we get so many characters. And as we're going to see, episode 7, Evolution, we're going to discuss War World, Mount Justice, and the Dinner. In episode 8, Trip Tech, we're going to discuss Black Lightning versus Livewire, which was so fun, Temptress versus Cheshire, the Breakouts, and Mad Hatter, and Batman is back. See, we're getting a lot more full coverage on different characters that you might not normally see all placed in one universe. And of course, episode 9, Home Fires, Lobo Fan Club, Superhero Mommy Fan Club, and The Light Fan Club, because that's all me, and we're right here. Let's start with episode 7, Evolution. We're getting a little more deep into the realm, right? Until now, we've had a lot of backstory, and when I say backstory, I mean prepping for the season. In this episode, 7, Evolution, we actually do get a real backstory. We get a lot of backstory regarding Vandal Savage, who we haven't seen much of since the end of season 2, and even then, we knew there was going to be a big storyline that plays with the supervillain, but what was it? Where does he fit? We know that he's possibly the leader of the light right now, but he's definitely a very fundamental, powerful figure in the light. If there is no leader, because we're thinking that maybe all of the members of the light have some type of position or role that they're playing, that might be the case. All we know is that Ra's al Ghul is not in control of the Shadow League of Shadows, and we'd love to know who is. Hopefully we find out, and it might be Vandal. But what we do learn about Vandal is some really good stuff. We get this backstory on Vandal Savage. Well, that has to do with the meteorite that he touches, of course, that gives him this immortality. The Neanderthals versus the humans that are coming to be. But we also get the bear story. And we see Olivia, who is Vandal Savage's daughter, one of his oldest living daughters, keep bringing up that backstory of, but did you read the part about the bear? And when asked why it's her favorite part, it might be the best answer of all time, followed by the saddest event of all time. The best answer is because it's the only part that happens before his immortality. This is when it's really man against beast, Neanderthal against beast, Vandal Savage is human and has mortality and still displays a sign of fearlessness, where he goes up against this bear, and we see why he has the claw marks. Now, this is a stray away from background stories that we've gotten in other cartoon worlds. I won't even go into the actual Vandal Savage story, but the other worlds in which Vandal actually goes to the meteorite just to get away from the cold. He sleeps next to it because he's cold, not because out of just curiosity. The warmth comforts him. And we also see in this one that the meteorite had killed other people. There was a toxic zone, which Vandal also survives to get close to the meteor. Then when the people come, they realize that he's immortal, and they worship and praise him. We see Vandal on Warworld, which, you know, he's been in control of ever since the end of season 2 of Young Justice. We see Vandal in control of Warworld, and we're introduced to his daughter. We're introduced to Cassandra. Now, Cassandra is a very smart, very competent, intelligent woman who he clearly trusts her. He trusts her, but there is a lot of ominous signs of Vandal Savage. Now, while we've grown to really like him, we still have to remember he is a villain. And as a villain, he has his own hidden agenda. And while he believes in a very Thanos-esque way that what he's doing is the best for the universe, or at least for Earth, it's still not something that we've all decided. He's taken on this very dictator role of, this is what is the best for you, and I know best because I'm better than all of you. So we're introduced to Cassandra, the daughter, and the daughter is very much a savage. She's very much a savage. She's in control. She understands. But there's a side of her that I think is yet to be seen. She has a lot of empathy. There's a lot of interesting dichotomy between the two. And she sees things in her father that she doesn't want to see in herself. Now, she's also, not only do we get Cassandra, we also get this history of the evolution of man, the story of Vandal, and it's in this the Claude book from as a gift from Olivia. And we see the fire from the sky that seemed to touch the ground, the meteor. We get the bear story, and it plays. And it's a storyline that plays throughout the show. Not only does it show who Vandal Savage is and how he has prospered and lived throughout the ages in many different forms. We see him as Genghis Khan. We see him as Marduk. We see him in different incantations of who he is as a person, all the same. And he's had many children throughout the years. We see these things, but we also get introduced to the world's purpose, which is traveling, and how him and Darkseid are still in this contract, in this bond that they have between one another. Something that we thought was very recent, but no, we find out, interestingly enough, from this book, that it's something that's portrayed from the 13th century when Savage was actually Genghis Khan. Darkseid comes to Earth and it is basically the Four Horsemen in some ways. It's the apocalypse. And Genghis Khan, in the form of Vandal Savage, is able to resist. And even though he loses, he's able to impress conquering Darkseid to the point where he sees something special in man, specifically in metahumans, specifically, even more so, in Vandal Savage. And Vandal Savage and says, this is an ally. This is someone that I can create accordingly to, because war is death. Death is waste, and life should not be wasted while it yet can be controlled to serve a greater purpose. Wow. Such a profound statement. That's a founding principle within Vandal Savage, a man who is built on principles. Now, they are his own principles, and to him, the ends justify the means completely. As we have seen, as I brought up, in one of the most ruthless and yet somehow compassionate moments of Vandal is when he kills his own daughter. She has become frail. She has become fragile. She's displaying some signs of an Alzheimer-like behavior where she's forgetful and she's slowly just fading. And in an act of compassion, you're no longer useful, you're no longer strong, but still ruthless. Vandal Savage kills his own daughter. And even though we've seen more blood on movies and more blood, of course, even in this show, that was so brutal. And it was so brutally honest at the same time that I found myself staring at it almost in shock. Because he hugged her and then broke her neck. And Cassandra also felt that same ominous sense of shock. Not shock that her father did this, but shock that her father was able to do this. There's a very interesting difference there. And we get a lot of this evolution feel, because we go Neanderthal, human, metahuman being the next progression of man. But we also get a lot of evolution in Vandal Savage. This man goes from being a lone warrior to a leader, to a god, to a conqueror, and comes up with these these very art of war ideas. It is better to capture an army than to destroy it. Wow. We see this and we find out that Savage is 50,000 years old. That's a lot of experience. That's a lot of life to have lived. This immortality is real. It's something that we have to understand. Of Vandal, there's a difference when you live that long. Like, if you know anyone that's upper in age, you realize there's a lot of differences. Well, what if you had 50,000 years of experience to go on? Wow. What kind of mindset would that person have? In some ways, that experience is invaluable. In some ways, it could be your undoing. I really enjoyed the aspect of learning about who Vandal Savage was. And with the war world being, okay, so the war world is in the situation where it's being attacked by the star people. The star people who we also see Marduk and Ishtar had to fight back in the day, right? So he's Vandal Savage is acclimated to this. And he even so much so that he knows that there's a ship that he has to go and attack, that there's another ship, a mothership that must be held. And we see his ally Darkseid is contacted, and he contacts him and says, and we see actually Vandal Savage contacts two different people, Lex Luthor ally and then Darkseid, the two most dangerous people in the universe, right, back to back, contacts Darkseid and basically says, I'm gonna need some assistance. Darkseid sends his son Kalibek. He's a brute. Vandal Savage is brutal, but he's not a brute. Kalibek just comes in and even has a lot to say. Of course, the undertone of, I don't understand why we need you. I'm the arrogant. I am going to be the next Darkseid. And I love how Kalibek has daddy issues. Definitely daddy issues all the way there. All right, and we see that this is something that they have history, these two. These two have history. And do you see how Vandal is ever the consummate politician? Uses tact, that refinement from a Neanderthal, right? That refinement. This is a person who's in almost complete full control of his emotions, of his prowess, of his abilities. He's completely self-aware, completely aware at all times, knows these things, knows how to play his cards, knows when to play his cards, knows how to speak. And even in the way he says things, even in his retorts, they're just so refined and well thought out. It's a brilliance that Vandal Savage displays and shows us. Very wonderful for him to fight this armada of warships, and we see this leader, and even though we know that he's on the wrong side, of course, we feel this righteousness that he feels within himself. Very, very strong portrayal of Vandal Savage, and an even better contrast with Olivia being, yes, she's Vandal, but she's something else too. She's something else too. As far as something else, for all of you who want something else from AfterBuzz, just know that we create a variety of after shows for all of your favorite shows. And before we move on to the next topic, I just want to say thank you for making us the ESPN of TV Talk. But for us to continue to grow, we need your help. If you're on YouTube right now, hit that thumbs up button and subscribe. And if you're on iTunes, please give us 5 stars, a 5-star rating. We need it. Comment, please. We enjoy hearing from each and one of you. But no matter where you are, leave us a comment so you can get involved in the conversation. This panel isn't just about me. It's about us. We are a team. I'm not here alone. I've got each and every one of you to discuss these things with. And being a part of AfterBuzz TV has meant so much to all of us. We truly appreciate you supporting us and doing what we love. Don't forget to tell your friends and keep enjoying our shows. Thank you so much for being a part of us and for keeping us being the ESPN of TV Talk. We appreciate you very much. So let's get into the next. We have a lot to discuss. Let's get into the next concept. Mount Justice. Now, Mount Justice, we find Nightwing and Temptress and Superboy are training Forger, Halo, and Geo-Force. They even picked their names. And we had that timing, right? The Geo-Force wanting to be called Hot Lava because he's hot and lava. And then Temptress making the joke, oh, well, that's a stripper name. And the joke being made, your name's Temptress. Hilarious. I love this. The writing on the show is phenomenal. This season, I think, is the best written season yet to date. And I've been a super fan since season one. So season two, great. But this season three is something else. We also see that Forger keeps playing the part of the ever-loving comedic relief. He says the funny thing. He does the funny thing. We love Forger's responses. And yet somehow they're brilliantly insightful at the same time. We love that. We love that idea of who Forger plays. We also see Geo-Force is still that angry person. He's getting better at control, you know, especially with the suit. Loves the suit. Likes how it's form-fitting and everything. But we still see that he's not as in control. And we see Halo. Halo is now displaying an even new power. It's almost as if every episode she just gets more and more powerful. I'd love to know way more about Halo, not as the being, but where did she come from? These powers are great. These powers come from something. Because this is more than metahuman. This is almost a godly level. And I'm going to be interested in seeing what happens when the others find out, and when the light find out about how powerful Halo is. Can't be killed. Now has holographic projections. Shoots, shield, flies. All we need is super strength in some way, and we can see it, right? We also get a lot of, while they're training, we get a lot of little tidbits. We get the whole concept of Batman versus Superman. Who would win? As we've seen, Batman, who has no powers, has bested Superman because of the IQ, because of the intelligence, because of having that gameplay experience. We're seeing that right now. A lot of us are watching gameplay experience. If you're watching the football games, you see that experience comes in handy. We see that in almost every aspect of life, that experience, that IQ, that knowledge, that outsmarting instead of outworking, that brain force beats brute force many times. Be aware of that. And we also talk about the divine art of subtlety and secrecy. Through you, we learn to be invisible, right? We learn to be invisible. Nightwing became a poet in this episode when he was talking about the cryptonyms, the nom de guerre, right? The code names, the superhero names. It was very fun. And then we find out a tidbit. Nightwing was named from an 80s mullet band. Very funny. Bringing to light and making us like them. And we see these different maneuvers that they're doing. They're doing the learning from their training. The training is putting in that 10,000 hours, right? 10,000 hours into being the best superhero that you can be. Getting from the outsiders to being on the inside, the Young Justice and the Teen Titans, and then moving up to the Justice League. We also get the whole concept of Forger talking about nakedness, which also very, like I said, Forger's such a good comedic relief. The way he talks very reminds me of Yoda in a way. It's got that same feel. We get that same feel. Another cute tidbit we got, and when I say cute, I mean it's something that's going to play later when we talk about our news and gossip before a special segment, is the Victor Stone. We're getting a little touch, and we're going to talk about that a little more, but we get a little Victor Stone in the radio report. We see that there is such a person in existence. So all this training is going to lead to something much, much more. And then we have a dinner, and we've spoken about this before, is the little... what would you call it? Flame? The little romance that's budding between Dr. Jason and Jefferson, Black Lightning. They're at dinner. They're having a good time, having a good conversation. And there's a little bit of flirting, a little bit of touching. And then they walk back. He walks her back like a gentleman, walks her back to the hotel room. And then she, like a woman empowered, takes his hand and takes him inside the room. And we get that they have now... their level of relationship has now crossed over into being intimate with one another. Very interesting, and it'll play because now where does Black Lightning's loyalty lie? Who is he on the Dr. Jace side? We've established at this point, I'm under the belief that Dr. Jace is a good person, good guy. Black Lightning, who's his first loyalty to protect? Is it the team or his love interest? Because she throws herself into situation. Also, now we see he's taking a much more aggressive role in trying to reconcile Dr. Jace with Halo and Brionne. GeoForce. We see that playing more. Very interesting. Good episode 7. Very fun. Pertinent. Important. That Vandal Savage story is going to play a huge part. Cassandra seems to play a huge part. Let's get into episode 8. Triptech. We're going to discuss, like I said, Black Lightning versus Livewire, Temptress versus Cheshire, the breakouts, and of course, Mad Hatter and Batman is back. This is the episode in which Miss Livewire and Shade made their move on the Star Labs in Detroit. We also get the breakout of Brick we see Sportsmaster Kadabra try to break out Brick, and the other mysterious prisoner who turns out to be Shade from being taken, right? So, starting with Black Lightning versus Livewire. Black Lightning, Dr. Jace was so good. Whatever happened in bed was so good. Jefferson has decided to become Black Lightning again. His powers just re-manifest themselves. Boom! They work all of a sudden out of nowhere. So we get this fight between Black Lightning and Livewire, which makes a lot of sense because of that electricity, the electricity. And then we see where experience beats just brute force. Livewire, being a Livewire, being Livewire herself, is just all over the place while Jefferson comes back with a maneuver, a move, and then does the little head zap thing. Livewire's out for the count. Makes it work. Great fight. Great fight. That is contrasted by Temptress and Cheshire. We know they're sisters. We know they're sisters, and it's a very... We've been wondering where Cheshire's been because we've seen Will Harper, the father, the baby daddy. We've seen the baby. We've seen Temptress living with Will, which is going to be a very interesting point that we need to talk about. But we see Leanne. We see the baby. We haven't seen Cheshire yet. Cheshire is running around for the light. Might not even know that she's actually working with her father, who she despises, Sportsmaster, who's working a different angle. We don't know. We talk about the concept of Temptress and Cheshire having that meeting. That meeting was even more intense than the fighting that was going on outside with everybody involved in the fighting. That the anxiousness of Temptress meeting up with Cheshire was so intense, just because you can feel that they love each other, but they're on different sides of the law. And Temptress is like, when are you going to go see your baby? Like, hey, mom, hey, mother of a child, when are you going to go see your baby? And Cheshire, you get a really good glimpse inside Cheshire's inner soul, because Cheshire makes the statement where she doesn't feel like she's worthy of her children, of her child. She feels like she might ruin this kid's life if she's around. And then she says, well, I'm Cheshire first. But I don't know if she's trying to convince Temptress or herself. That was a very, very great scene. That drama goes beyond cartoon. That is very live action. That's something that we would see much more played out on a Grey's Anatomy or This Is Us. It was just so strong to see the mother act in such a way, and you could feel for her, you empathize for her, and they never really fight. They don't try to hurt each other because you can see the underlying love they have for one another. This is Cheshire. Cheshire even went back to try to avenge her sister's death when she thought she had died. So they do have a strong bond and a strong love for one another. And we also hear this fact that Cheshire is like, you're my team, watch your back, right? Cheshire is in charge of this team. Cheshire's still a leader in this organization of some sort. We don't know who's running the League of Shadows. We don't know now where they are. But we do learn from Cheshire that they are being run out of Santa Prisca. And that was that information that Cheshire was almost too readily willing to give. They're being run out of Santa Prisca. I don't know who runs them, but they're being run out of Santa Prisca. That seems to be a setup for some type of trap. Halo, boom, again, displays a new power. Halo in the fight scene against Shade has this light power in which she basically eviscerates Shade's power with her light. And she always displays these powers when she's at the best, when she's excited or protecting someone. So we'll find out how much more that goes in. And As far as like McGann talking to Wonder Woman, I love the characters that come to play. Let me talk really quick about this breakout, because this breakout plays, and I was debating whether to talk about Batman now, but that's like the most exciting part of the show, right? Let's talk about Sportsmaster Kadabra and Kadabra breaking out Brick and mysterious other prisoner. The sheriffs in the truck turn out to be Flash and Shazam, and that conversation and banter that they're having between them, because Flash is a kid and Shazam's actually a kid. So we see this more grown up Flash acting a little more mature, but then the real Flash going is like, I love this stuff. I love what we do. And they come out. We see that being broken out is part of this bigger plan that's unlaced by Batman, which we will get into. But they are, instead of creating new metas, they're basically freeing new metahumans and getting them to use them. And it's a three-part plan. This breakout was a fun scene, but it led more to the concept of what we're getting for the light. We're getting more to what's going on. There's a lot behind the scenes. And now let's talk about Batman. Batman is back. Now, I personally do not like how this Batman is being drawn. I feel like there's a weak chin or something. I need that strong chiseled chin that I'm so used to from the 90s animated series. This Batman just seems a little bland to me, but he's still Batman, and I love me some Batman. Robin and the team is keeping tabs on the Mad Hatter. The Mad Hatter who's been paroled, and I don't understand how these people keep getting parole. You are a serial killer supervillain. How are you getting parole? How are you getting out of anything? I don't care if you're insane, not putting down mental health. What I'm saying is, when you're a supervillain, that's not insanity. That's not mental health issues. You're just crazy. Can we talk about that? Can we talk about how he gets parole? Mad Hatter gets parole, and not wearing hats is a condition of the parole. That was very, very interesting and fun. And then, of course, the comment, good thing he's not called the Mad Panther. So Robin's team is made up of Spoiler, Arrowette, and Orphan. Orphan is this dark, brooding Batman, if Batman went even further, character. Then they see Mad Hatter's drinking a lot of water, which they're saying this isn't normal. Maybe he's Clayface. And while they're talking about it, Orphan just goes and uses her sword to cut Mad Hatter in half. No, like, I think it's Clayface, so I'm going to act on it. And if it wasn't Clayface, there would be one dead Mad Hatter laying somewhere. But, of course, it was Clayface, and Clayface fights. Then we find out, of course, that they're controlling people through the use of this nanotech. Oof. The nanotech is the problem, right? Now they're not just blackmailing people or brainwashing people. The nanotech, you can control anyone with the nanotech. Here's the thing. We find out that it all leads back, at least at this level, to Simon Stagg. Branchwater leads to Lakewood, Antler Ray Media, 12 Points Unlimited, all back to Simon Stagg and his use of corporate warfare and using this whole thing as metacrime for his covert ops unit. It's like his own personal little army. Now, there's three parts to their little deviant plan. Three parts: acquisition, coercion, and utilization. That's the difference between them and Bedlam. Bedlam just seems to be just gaining all these metahumans using a little patch. This is nanotech technology. This is even more severe. And they seem to be even more villainous, more evil, right? Because instead of creating new metas, they're acquiring them. They free new meta. Coercion, instead of control chips, nanotech is being used to force them to follow commands. And the utilization, using them for their own good. Now, a very interesting plot device. Stagg uses this actual device that the Reach left, a Reach device that's supposed to be a metahuman failsafe, because possibly Stagg is afraid, as most people who are villains are, and if you see that characteristic, feared that people would use metas against him the way he's using metas against other people. So we get this conversation in the Batcave where McGann and Wonder Woman, we finally see that actually these separate teams, which to the world are all separate, are actually all working together. And Wonder Woman says between the seven of us, we are coordinating six teams of heroes, none of whom know we are all working together. That's what they're really actually doing. Wonder Woman is disappointed because the point that Robin makes is we're fighting fire with fire. We are the anti-light. Is that who we want to be? We want to be in darkness? And we're getting something that I love is plausible deniability, where Batman's like, we don't want people to not have plausible deniability. You don't want Superman. You think Superman's going to lie on the stand? No, you don't want them to know what we're doing over here. We have to play a little dirty, and we're going to keep their hands clean because their hands mean more than my hands. That's what Batman says. Batman forever being the anti-hero, not the hero we wanted, the hero we deserved, or however it's played out, right? The hero we need. The one, he's always that guy. And Wonder Woman's like, oh, so you expect me to lie on the stand? And Batman, of course, with the Batman answer goes, as a princess of Themyscira, I expect you to use your diplomatic status to avoid taking the stand at all. I know you won't lie, Wonder Woman. I love you. But you're a diplomat. You can get off. Superman, we need him to keep his hands clean. Batman being Batman at his finest. Always having that plan B. Always having the layers on layers on layers. Batman is an expert strategist, tactician, the detective, ever consummate detective. Man, that's why I love this show. Episode 9, rolling into Home Fires. If you love Lobo, welcome to the episode for you, because this is Lobo being Lobo. Lobo, the universe's bounty hunter killer, right? Lobo's just such a Lobo guy. Superhero mommy fan club. We're going to learn a lot about these superhero mommies who get together. Of course, there were two husbands there, but we really meant superhero mommies. And the light. The light finally makes a real appearance. Let's start with another. So we've seen a lot of planets, and we're back on Rembor here. Lobo. Let's start with Lobo. Lobo is contracted for an earther, a peon earthling who's going to die, who turns out not to be an earthling at all. It's Forger. Forger has been contracted. Now, we're thinking possibly Mantis contracted him or McGann's brother, but no, it turns out to be the light. And they're contracting to test the powers. That's such a light thing to do. So conniving, so good. We see it all starts with Cat Grant and reporting, and then Lobo, of course, on Rembor. Lobo is just the Lobo. Lobo's bike even takes on the motorcycle. Lobo goes in like, I've never gotten a full sense of what Lobo's power is. I mean, this guy regenerates. This guy's super strong. He's skilled. He's a skilled fighter. He's skilled with weapons. He has his favorite. He's a Clint Eastwood, The Rock. He's all of them in one. Lobo is just so good, so strong. And it comes, ironically, after Nightwing is teaching the team of Halo, Forger, and Geo-Force about surprise attacks. So they're brought to a clearing. Nightwing surprise attacks them. And Geo-Force fails this. Geo-Force fails because he's not prepared at all. And that's a part of being a superhero, is being ready for almost anything at any time. They get a surprise attack by Lobo, and Lobo straight up, and there's no running from the main man, you know, such a Lobo thing to say. Lobo straight up hits Halo with this like throwing knife chain thing. That's like a fatality move. It was like, get over here. It was like Scorpion, get over here. And then kills her. Luckily, she regenerates. But Lobo had no idea that was her power. He's just going after whoever was in his way. She was trying to fly off a Forger. I'm going to get you. Halo gets another power. Halo gets even another power, I guess, and she just gets stronger whenever she's protecting someone. She takes the blow head on with the force field like it's nothing. Then Forger is trying to get away. He comes back in his spinny, roly-boly thing that he does, and Lobo just bashes it. Lobo bashes it. You see the gook everywhere, just gook, and it seems that this is the end of Forger. I mean, the team is looking on in dismay and total horror. They're like, oh my gosh, Forger is gone. And then of course Forger comes out and he's shed his exoskeleton and is now this gooky gooey thing. just as any goes. I think Forager understands what being naked means. Forager understands now because he's without his exoskeleton. And so Temptress welcomes Forager to the Fake Your Own Death Club. Because Temptress, of course, season two, the whole concept of how she became Temptress, of course, is by faking her own death, which leads to all the events of season two and everyone's feeling betrayed by Aqualad and so forth and how they got into that. Now, we need to talk about the light. Real quick, before we get to the light, Dr. Jace comes back, Black Lightning brings it. Dr. Jace apologizes yet again. This time, they seem to accept the apology. I don't know. What do you think? Do they accept her apology? Does Dr. Jace, because she thought she was doing the right thing, should she be forgiven? I want to know what your thoughts are in the comments below. I appreciate it. Now, as I was getting into the light, man, we're on Greater Byalia, the light. We see that they were the ones who actually contracted Lobo to hit Forager because they wanted to confirm Vertigo's story that Superboy and Black Lightning. We see Savage there. We see Lex Luthor. We saw them together contact each other in the previous episode. Now we see Savage, Lex Luthor, Queen Bee, Deathstroke, Ultra Humanite. And then we see this interview earlier with Granny Good, right? Who's going to be Gretchen Good for Good VR goggles. Man, we've been sending those warning signals for a while here. This is crazy. We knew something was wrong with those Good VR goggles, but then we find out that they're partnered with the Wayne Foundation. Uh-oh. Is Granny Goodness on the right side? Good World Studios and the Wayne Foundation partnered up to help metahumans? What's going on here? And we see all this as Superboy's watching this G. Gordon Godfrey show, and Granny Goodness is the guest, right? Well, G. Gordon Godfrey, of course, calling the original the Metahuman Delinquent Center. So no fan of the metahumans here, but whoa, what's going on? We weren't expecting Granny Goodness to be on the side with Wayne, with Bruce Wayne. Oh, but maybe Bruce Wayne is smart. Maybe he's getting in. Maybe he's trying to figure out what their plan is, because that's how smart Bruce Wayne is. Bruce Wayne is Batman. Bruce Wayne gets it. But we see them together, and then we see her later as clearly a very important role in the light. And we also see Clarion come on. Now, let's get really quick to the Superhero Moms Club. We see Iris, Louise, Queen Mara, Lynn Stewart, Green Lantern's wife, Bumblebee, Red Tornado, Will Harper, and Bart Allen get together. There's this like superhero mommy club that they do at the house, and there's an assassin across the street. We're waiting to see who this assassin is. The assassin reveals himself to be Orn, the Ocean Master, who always feels betrayed because he should have been king and not Aquaman. Oh, Orm. Orm is there, and Orm gets out. Right when he's about, he's waiting, he's patiently waiting for all of them to get together, kill them all at the same time. Right before he's about to do it, Lady Shiva approaches him, and right when he's about to kill everyone, she kills Ohm. She calls this the nuclear option. She says that this is the nuclear option to kill all of them. We've thought about this. It's the light. They've thought of this. But we don't do it because there's a mutually assured destruction where we're all going to lose. We're all going to lose if this happens. And she just beheads him right as he's about to take a shot because Orm is going to be Orm. That's how true the light is staying to their cause, that they're willing to kill anyone who's deviating, even in a villainous way, from their plan. Whoever hurts before they can make their move is going to be eliminated. Wow. Big, big news. Big understanding of this. And that's where we get Home Fires Episode 9. Let's get into some of that news and gossip, shall we? News and gossip. Boom. We're getting into it where basically the news and gossip is Young Justice Outsiders is finally introducing Cyborg. We're going to get a Cyborg. Cyborg originally created, of course, by Marv Wolfman and George Perez for the new Teen Titans is one of the favorites. We even get to see him in the movies. Cyborg is just the person we like. We're going to get to see see Cyborg get to play. Young Justice has steered clear of using Cyborg or other heroes created by Wolfman and Perez in earlier seasons. This was probably due to some rights issues, but now we get it. We're going to get it. Another Easter egg that was confirmed backstory is the three plot lines involved in attempted robbery at Star Labs. Boom, the one in Detroit. And, of course, they knocked out a scientist while raiding this lab and stole the piece of alien technology. Boom, another one. We're getting that at the end of TrepTech. We realized that the scientist is Dr. Silas Stone. So here are these little Easter eggs on picking up on how we know. And then further confirmation came when the latest batch of episodes was released and preview images of the final episodes, of course, had someone who we know now is most certainly Victor Stone. So kudos to all of us for getting a Cyborg finally in Young Justice. That's the best thing ever. For a special segment, which scene represents you? I'd love to know what you think. Which scene represents you? The scene that represented me was the scene in which I felt, and this is so real, when Forger is naked and is like, oh, I finally understand what being naked means, because he was just being himself, but of course he made it funny, and that's just something I can relate to, something I feel good for. So now we have now just talked over episodes 7, 8, and 9. Thank you so much for being a part of our show. I appreciate you. We talks Evolution, TrepTech, and Home Fires. If there's anything I missed, leave it in the comment below. I'd love to discuss. We're always here for you. I appreciate each and every one of you, and your comments are very enlightening. Keep them coming right in the comments below. Make sure you tag, share, subscribe, send them to your friends. Let your friends know I'm here each and every week discussing Young Justice. I am discussing Young Justice season 3. Next week we're going, I think we're getting 4 episodes next week as we get to the conclusion of the first part of season 3. Thank you again for watching. My name is Taron. I've been your host. Find me at I Am Taron all across the board and on a slew of other AfterBuzz shows, especially your favorite comic book shows. From us to all of you, have a great night. See you guys next week.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.